Chapter 8. The Rebs.
The night was quiet, but not the dawn of the 6th of May. The crackling of musket fire came to Charlie's ears on all sides. More fighting. Not knowing what else to do, he stayed where he was until a new fear propelled him into action. Fire! Fires from the sparks of thousands of cannon shells had sprung up among the dry leaves of the wilderness and roared over acres of timberland. Now the gray smoke billowing from them, mixing with gunpowder fumes, drove Charlie Quinn out of his protective thicket. Coughing, frightened by the smoke, he bent to wet his pocket handkerchief in swamp water and tie it around his nose and mouth. As he stooped at the edge of the stinking dark water, he heard a sharp clicking sound he recognized, the cocking of a pistol. Straightening and whirling around, Charlie looked up into the face of a lantern-jawed, sallow, yellow-haired man in a brown-yellow short jacket, blue Union Army trousers, and a gray forage cap. A rebel for sure. In his hand was a huge, long-barreled cavalry pistol. It was aimed at Charlie's head. The boy froze. First the man shot a wad of tobacco juice at Charlie's feet. Then he asked softly, "What have we got here? I'd say it was a red-head Yankee boy. Kind of small, ain't ya? If you were a turtle now, I'd throw you back in the swamp to grow up some. Who'd you be?" Charlie faltered. "I was a drummer boy. My name's Charlie." After that, he fell silent. "Charlie what?" "Make it skedaddle," Charlie told him bitterly. The Confederate laughed. "That's some queer old name you got. Come along with me, boy. My officer will want to talk to you. Give me your knapsack and just move out ahead of me." "Who are you?" Charlie asked. "Who I am don't matter." Was he a prisoner? Charlie sank his teeth into his lower lip to keep from crying. What would happen to him now? What did the Johnny Rebs do with Yankee drummer boy prisoners? Charlie tied the wet cloth over his face and hands in the air, began to walk ahead of his rebel captor. It was hard going through the tangle of vines and hickory bushes that tore his uniform. Twice he fell and was prodded to his feet by the toe of his captor's boot and the words, "Get up, Yankee boy. I ain't got all day to fetch you back to where we got to go." Deep among the thickets and trees, Charlie could not see 15 feet ahead of him. But on either side, he saw clearly the dead bodies of men dressed in blue and butternut brown and gray uniforms lying stiff and staring. Sometimes tongues of flame shot up so near that their clothing was singed. The brush hissed and popped in the heat as bright red sparks flew over their heads. Surely this was like the hell the sisters in school and the priest in church had warned him about. After much turning and twisting, they arrived at a clearing filled with men dressed in the butternut brown color of the Confederate Army. A half dozen blue coat soldiers sat on the ground with their hands folded on top of their heads. Charlie's captor told him, "Get on over there and sit down with them other blue bellies." The boy did as he was told. Looking from face to face, he was relieved to see no one he knew. He took the handful of skillet parched corn a reb gave him and tried to chew it. He couldn't, had spit it out. Rebel soldiers watching him laughed. One said, "It's what we got to eat. Ain't it good enough for you, Yankee brat?" A rebel officer in a very tattered, soiled gray coat came over to the prisoners to warn. "Don't you Union men do any talking to one another. I'll personally shoot the man who does. Someone will be coming to get you soon." His words proved true. Very shortly, 3 Confederate soldiers with muskets and shining bayonets came to rouse the Yankees up and send them walking ahead of them. An hour's marching of nearly 3 miles brought Charlie and the others through the wilderness to a large open space where they once again were told to sit. There was a farmhouse, a barn, and some other outbuildings here, as well as hundreds of shabbily dressed Confederate soldiers. Most were gaunt and grimy. Not a few were shoeless. Some wore gray forage caps, others wore brown slouch hats over a mixture of gray and butternut brown jackets and coats. Some had on Union blue trousers stripped from the enemy dead. White smoke from the muskets firing among the trees mingled with the dark smoke from the wilderness fires. Coming across the open space, in acrid-smelling wreaths, it made men cough and sneeze. Charlie put the handkerchief up over his nose and mouth again. The boy was just settling himself onto the ground when he was forced to leap to his feet to keep from being run over by a host of men racing toward him. Rebels! Rebels retreating as fast as they could. Then a great animal-like roar rose up from 1,000 throats, and Charlie saw other tattered rebels racing forward through the ranks of their retreating comrades. A charge! As they ran, they screeched the famous rebel yell, "Yee!" Behind them came a tall, gray-bearded officer in a gray uniform under a black cloak, riding a dapple gray horse with a black mane and tail. As the officer reached the charging men, a few of them, hearing the hoofbeats, slackened their speed. At once, a wild shouting rose up from these men. "Go back, General Lee! Go back!" "Lee? Robert E. Lee?" Charlie Quinn gasped in amazement, and as did the other prisoners. Generals were seldom seen anywhere, and certainly not in infantry charges. Charlie watched, fascinated, as a sergeant of the charging Texas Brigade sprang forward to grab hold of the bridle of Lee's horse, stopping the famous traveler from going into battle with his master. Now, many Texans halted their attack to turn and shout, "We won't go unless you go back." A Confederate officer rode up to Lee's side and began to argue with him. When Lee slowly shook his head, the sergeant let go of the rein to release it to his commander-in-chief. An enormous cheer crashed into the smoky air as Robert E. Lee turned his horse around and began to ride towards some horsemen in a knoll to his right. "Lee! Lee!" echoed soldiers' deep voices. While their comrades cheered, those men of the Texas Brigade, who had forced Lee back to safety, resumed their charge against the Yankees among the trees. As for Charlie Quinn, he sat down again at a bayonet's prod until a corporal came over, pointed to him, and then jerked him to his feet. Hustled along, he was taken to a tent where a sad-faced, balding Confederate officer sat at a little folding table. It was hot inside, and the front and rear tent flaps were open for ventilation. Once the corporal had gone, the officer asked, "Who are you, lad?" "Charlie. Charlie Skedaddle. I know that word. And I doubt that is your real last name." Charlie swallowed and said, "It's Quinn, sir." "You are not a soldier, are you?" "No, sir. I never signed any papers to enlist. I was only a drummer." At this, the officer put down the pen he had in his hand. "A drummer boy. I thought as much. What is your age?" 12, sir." "What is your regiment?" Charlie didn't answer. All soldiers had been warned that if they were ever captured, they were to tell only their name and rank. He had done that already, and now he said, "I can't tell you that, sir." The officer smiled lightly. "Have you ever gone to school?" "Oh, yes, sir. I can read and write just dandy." "I'm glad to hear it. I was a schoolmaster at one time." He sighed. "How did you get separated from your regiment? I think you can tell me that, you know." Blushing, Charlie lowered his gaze. He stuttered, "I got scared when I saw my drum hit by a Minet ball and saw my friend Jem get killed, so I ran away. Mother Mary, no, he wouldn't dare say he picked up a musket and killed a Reb. That'd bring him more trouble for sure." "So you ran away?" "I thought you had. Well, you are only a child after all." "Have you ever heard of Andersonville Prison?" "No, sir, I haven't." The Confederate officer sighed again. "It's a prison camp for Yankee soldiers down in Georgia. It would be a very bad place to send a boy of your age. You should be in a classroom. If any of the men from your regiment in Andersonville found out you were a deserter, it would be even worse for you." "Well, then, I think I shall have to do something else with you. You will note that I have not written down one word about you. I have no record of you." "What will you do with me, sir?" "Have you any money with you?" "A little bit." "Good. Yankee money is worth quite a bit more here than our money. Do you see the open tent flap behind me?" "Yes, sir, I do." "Then be so good, Charlie Skedaddle, as to skedaddle through it right now. As I see it, you are of no use to us, and I don't want it on my conscience that I sent a 12-year-old boy to Andersonville." "You're letting me go?" "Yes, I am. There is a thicket of some size behind this tent. Get into it and stay there until this battle is over and we move on." "But where'll I go after that, sir?" "That is up to you," the officer frowned. "If you go north, you'll run into your own troops. If you go south, you'll be captured again and may fare differently with some other man. If you go east, you could run into battle after battle. That's where the fighting is going to be next, unless I miss my guess. What's left to you, then?" "The west," said Charlie, unable to believe his good fortune. "Then west it has to be. That's mountain country here in Virginia. You will find it very different from New York City, but I see it as your only refuge right now." Charlie gasped out, "How did you know I was from New York City?" "Your manner of speaking, and how you pronounce words. I've been there. I've made a study of accents. That's why I was given this particular chore with prisoners who will not talk. Get rid of your uniform if you know what is good for you. Now, my boy, do as I tell you. Skedaddle before I change my mind." "I don't fancy deserters, no matter how young they may be." Thank you, thank you, sir. After lifting his hat, Charlie Quinn shot like a bolt past the man's table and out the rear flap of the tent. He sprinted for the nearby hickory thicket and dived inside, all the while thanking the guardian angel the sister said he always had with him for his deliverance. Once inside the thicket, he took off his blue uniform blouse, discarded his cap, and began to pick at the stripes sewn along the sides of his trousers as part of his splendid drummer boy's uniform. Lying on his belly in the thicket on that long, hot day, Charlie had a lot of time to think and wonder, and the heat of shame crept up to his cheeks as he thought of Silas and Jem. They had not run. They'd fought it out. Had Silas died, too? What had happened to the 140th? Where were they now? Still fighting here in the wilderness? Were most of them dead, as his friends were? Would Noreen get a letter from someone in the 140th telling her that he had run away? Or would whoever wrote her be kind enough to say he was missing in action? Perhaps even mention that he had picked up a musket and used it. Used a musket. Yes, each time he closed his eyes, Charlie could again see the man he'd shot and killed. Mother Mary, he'd committed a mortal sin. He wasn't a real soldier who had orders to do that to an enemy. Where could he confess his sin? Where could he find a priest? He should have gone back to the rear of his regiment and halted there, ready to be captured. Or else he should have tried to get a new drum from the supply wagon. If he'd done that, he wouldn't be caught in this nightmare now. But he hadn't. He'd killed a man, and then he'd run and kept on running. Now look at him. He was no longer in any uniform at all, and he was alone and nameless in a thicket somewhere in the dreaded wilderness. The fight went on and on till sunset, and while it did, Charlie lay in his thicket, afraid to move, lest he be discovered. Insects crawled over him, and once a brown-bodied little snake twisted by, not 3 feet from his motionless hand. Oh, how did he ever find himself in this vile, hellish place? Why did he ever leave the Bowery? Sweet Mother of God, how he missed New York! How he wished he were back in the Bowery among his friends! He'd give anything to be with Noreen. He'd even be glad to see Mr. Demarest. They would find him different now. They would. He would even give up his membership in the Bowery Boys if Noreen wanted. Dozens of thoughts and recriminations, all of them sad or frightening, went through Charlie's head as he lay there, until finally, worn out by anguish, fear, and hunger, he fell asleep, his face pressed to the red soil, and while he slept, the battle of the wilderness slowed, and then petered out in the darkness.